life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to the Victims and Villains podcast. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and thank you for hitting play on this episode, and hopefully it does not implant a seed of destruction for whatever podcast device you're listening to, because we're talking about Hellboy's very first miniseries, Seed of Destruction, on this episode, and I cannot do this alone, so please help me in welcoming one of the voices from our website, Mr. Brandon Miller.
What's going on? It's been a long time since the last time I've been on here.
It has. I'm trying to think about the last episode that you were on. Have you done an episode since Slenderman?
Was Slenderman after Winnie the Pooh or before Winnie the Pooh?
It was after.
Okay. No, I think that's the last one I've done. I've done some Facebook stuff, you know, recently, but because that was around the time I started to kind of take a break from everything, because everything was kind of going crazy on my end.
Yeah, and so, like, we here at Victims and Villains, we practice what we preach, and so Brandon stepped away from doing a lot of the content, that we were doing with PS Midnight Cast, because we both were kind of going through some things, more so he with just mental health stuff, and so it's good to have him back. If you guys have not liked us on Facebook, make sure that you guys like us, because every weekend Brandon is continuously doing recaps and reviews of the Power Rangers Beast Morpher episodes, and we're backlogging those on YouTube as well, so make sure that you guys follow us on those platforms. But please help me in welcoming from our friends over at Ghosts of the Stratosphere podcast, Mr. Rob Stewart.
Hey there. It has been literally never since the last time I was on this show ever. So that's an easy recall. We don't have to worry about when that was. It is never. The answer is I've never been on before, and I'm happy and I'm thrilled to be on today.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you guys on. We've run a couple of your promos in the past. I can't remember the last time we ran one of your promos, but tell us a little bit about what Ghost of the Stratosphere is all about.
So we are a comic book podcast. It's myself and two buddies of mine, Chad and Andy, and we just got together one day and decided, hey, all we do is sit around and talk about comic books. We're going to start recording this stuff. So we've been around for just a hair over a year. We last month, February 2018, we celebrated our 1 year anniversary. So we're still going strong at this point. We've got our website, gotstratosphere.com. So that's just abbreviate Ghosts of the gotstratosphere.com. And yeah, we do a lot of stuff. We have articles, at least one every single day on our website. On the podcast, we do top 10 lists. We do read piles where we review new books, old books, any kind of comic book we feel like coming across. And we play a lot of games, so we have a lot of stuff going on there. It's basically we get together, and whatever we feel like recording that night, that's what we record.
Yeah, and you guys have an interesting array of content on your website as well. So you guys have a very diverse demographic of content that you guys kind of go through. When you guys are sitting down to do each episode, as far as like what books you want to review for that specific episode, how do you guys kind of do it? Because you guys went from most recently doing the bonus show of March, which was your Captain Marvel review, but then your most recent episode now is Tom King's Omega Men. So it's kind of like this like weirdly like dynamic that you guys kind of got going on, because Captain Marvel is such a very popular character right now because of the movie, but Tom King's Omega Men, I feel like it's kind of like this series that not a lot of people may have either known or heard about. So how do you guys decide what content you guys want to cover when it comes to your episodes?
Just pretty much off the top of our heads, whatever we feel like doing at the moment. How we got to Omega Men was we recently did Mr. Miracle, so we had kind of fallen into a Tom King niche. We wanted to do another Tom King book, and we have a rookie on our show, Zach, who he comes on, and he's likes comic books, but he hasn't read a lot, so we call him our rookie. We have him read some stuff, and he's a Green Lantern character fan, so he had said a while ago that the next book he wanted to read was going to be another Green Lantern book, so kind of just hodgepodge the, we want to do more Tom King versus Zach wanted to do a Green Lantern, and it was a pretty easy choice right there. But beyond that, when movies come out, like when Endgame comes out, I think we're going to do another Avengers book along with that. When Spider-Man Home or Far From Home comes out, we'll do a Spider-Man book. Ironically, and Andy would kill me if I didn't mention this, when Hellboy comes out, we're actually also reviewing Seed of Destruction. we've already recorded it before you even invited us on, so we're not ripping you guys off, I promise. We're also reviewing Seed of Destruction, so we have that ready to go. So, you know, if you don't get enough of me talking about Seed of Destruction here, I promise more is coming.
Man, I'm like new to the Hellboy fandom, so I went out and purchased the Omnibus, which is basically the first 4 to 5 series, and I just got done reading like almost like a sequel to Seed of Destruction, and like Hellboy is a character that just develops and just gets better with every passing, almost every passing series that you read. And I love that every series is kind of like self-contained, but it's also like reflective and like callbacks. It's a really interesting dynamic that I think not a lot of series do.
Yeah, absolutely. I promise I will get into it in a lot of depth over the course of this episode, but I am a huge Hellboy fan, and I do agree that it just gets better and better with every trade.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to kind of start digging into this. So over the year that you guys have done this podcast, what is the favorite comic series that you have been able to talk about?
My favorite comic series that we've talked about on the show is Kingdom Come. I mean, I've always loved Kingdom Come, so we had an episode where we read that, and I was a very big fan of that. So I'm always happy. I read Kingdom Come all of the time. That's a big favorite of mine. I think everybody would have a different answer to that. I know Chad, we did New Frontier by Darwin Cook, and he loves that series. I had strong feelings the other direction, but that's okay. I know he was a big fan of that, and Andy likes, we've done a Flash Gordon book, so that was one of his favorites. He loves a lot of the old 40s and 50s style sci-fi stuff.
I feel like I'm right there with you when it comes to Darwin Cook's work. Like, he's a great artist, but when he died and everyone was like reminiscing about New Frontier and like how good and how groundbreaking it was, I was like the complete opposite, because like it's a shame that he died. He was such a talent, but I loved his art style, but I couldn't necessarily get into that particular series. Like, it just wasn't my cup of tea. So like I will have to dig up that episode and actually check it out, because you have another person in your camp. You just didn't know it till right now.
Well, we're glad to have you. And yeah, we love that episode. We actually had the wives on that episode. So my wife Amanda was on, and Andy's wife Nicole was on. It came out right after the new year. I think the episode's called New Year, New Frontier. So absolutely feel free to look it up and let us know who you agree with, because Chad and I went into it on that one.
So what is the most painful book that you've had to sit through and endure this in the 1 year of your guys' inception?
For me, it was New Frontier.
Fair enough.
It absolutely was. I keep throwing that one in Chad's face. Chad is actually not a big Hellboy fan, and I kind of poked the bear today in text, and I said, well, I sleep easy knowing that people in Hollywood keep optioning big-budget Hellboy movies, yet no one's pushing for a live-action New Frontier.
I mean, DC has got to kind of get a grasp on what they want to do cinematically, because I'm in the minority camp that I've liked just about everything that they have pushed in the DCEU thus far. Mm-hmm. By the way, when I was listening to your new Marvel or the Marvel Captain Marvel review, it hurt my soul to be like kind of like downpoured and be called down, because I liked Man of Steel.
Hey, that's a great movie.
Oh, sorry about that. None of us are big fans. I'm a big believer of you like what you like, and I'm not going to denigrate anybody for liking what they like. But boy, that one was not for me.
That's fair. And I've often found out that that film is like very generationally divided. Like the younger you are, and like maybe the less on like Christopher Reeves as a character of Superman and his like, or maybe like Smallville, the more that you like, I found the more that fans like Tom or Henry Cavill's version of Superman. But like, if you're very like old school and like traditional, like then you have a tendency to, I think, fall in line with coming against Scott Snyder's or Zack Snyder's vision for the Man of Steel.
Yeah, I don't have an issue so much with Cavill. I would really like to see Cavill go on as Superman. I know we've already lost that, but I certainly didn't have any issue with his portrayal. I just, for my taste, and once again, this is just me saying, I thought the script and the direction let him down dramatically. I am super excited for Shazam, though, so I'm not just down inherently on the DCEU. I think Shazam is probably the biggest movie I'm looking forward to for the rest of the year, even more than Endgame, because we know Endgame's going to be great, but that Shazam movie just looks like so much bloody fun.
Sweet. So my last question for you guys is, where does the name Ghost of the Stratosphere come from? Because I remember when one of you guys had messaged me on Twitter and was like, would you guys be opening to a promo swap? And I'd never heard of Ghost of the Stratosphere, and just the name alone was like, sold. And then you guys gave me your promo, and this like promo, it's like so cinematic and just so captures the tone of what you guys go for. Where does the name come from?
So the original, I think Andy way back in the day had a blog on Tumblr or something, and he called it Ghosts of Electricity, which is, and I didn't know this, you might, I'm not super musically inclined, but it's a Bob Dylan reference. And so he wanted to call the podcast originally Ghost of Electricity, but once he said, oh, it's a Bob Dylan reference, yada, 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 I said, well, anybody who gets that reference is going to expect that we're either a music podcast or a Bob Dylan podcast, so we can't do that. And then Andy just also has an affinity, like I said, for the old 40s, 50s style sci-fi stuff. So we kind of threw some words at the wall to see what stuck, and we liked Ghost of the Stratosphere. We thought it had like that's a very 50s style science fiction movie you could picture coming out. Ghosts of the Stratosphere, and, you know, black and white, bad UFOs flying around and stuff. So we like the visual, and we also like that it doesn't really pigeonhole us into doing comic books. The podcast itself is pretty much comic book related, but the website, you know, under the banner Ghosts of the Stratosphere, we can talk about anything we want. I have a weekly article where I talk about Pop-Tarts, or we'll talk about pro wrestling, or we'll talk about whatever's on TV, or the Tetris game on the Wii. So it's kind of like a brand at this point that lets us do whatever we want without, you know, having comics or movies or something right in our name and, you know, feeling stuck in a genre.
I totally forgot about your Pop-Tart quest. How is that going?
It's stuck right now because the last several times I've been to the store, I haven't seen any new flavors. So I'm waiting for Pop-Tarts to catch up with me.
Are you like finding yourself like going to like different grocery stores to like see different selections?
I've had a shout out to our buddies at another comic book podcast, Pint of Comics, Johnny Ganache there. He messaged me all the time and says like, hey, I saw these at Big Lots. Have you seen this flavor before? So I think he's willing to pick me up some if he ever tells me he finds one that I haven't already seen.
Right. Well, where can people find you online if they want to hear more of Ghost of the Stratosphere?
The website, again, that's gotstratosphere.com. On Twitter, we're at gotstratosphere. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/gotstratosphere. Instagram is gotstratosphere. And then pretty much almost all the major podcatching places, iTunes, Apple, TuneIn, Stitcher. Our podcast is on YouTube, and we have other videos we post on YouTube. iHeartRadio, there's the whole thing with Alexa. I forget if that's TuneIn or what, but you can just tell your Alexa, hey, Alexa, play Ghost of the Stratosphere, and it'll play us. So we're everywhere. Just look Ghost of the Stratosphere. You'll find us.
All right. Well, you guys go check those guys out. We'll have all the links for what Rob just said in the descriptions for this episode. We're talking about Hellboy Seed of Destruction. We are less than a month away now from the upcoming David Harbour reboot, and we're all pretty excited. So we're getting in. This is the first of many Hellboy-themed episodes over the next few weeks. And what is Hellboy Seed of Destruction? So Hellboy Seed of Destruction is a four-part miniseries which stars the titular character Hellboy that was originally released in March of 1994 and ran until June of that year, so a total of four issues. This is the first miniseries starring the character. The story was conceived by character creator Mike Mignola. Mignola also served as the artist on the book, while John Baron crafted the script for the story. The series ran through Legend Comics, which was an imprint of Dark Horse Comics. The imprint ran from 94 to 1998, so this is one of the imprint's first stories. The imprint was actually created by writer John Braun and Frank Miller, and Mignola even crafted the logo for the company, and it aimed to be more creator-owned driven projects. So this particular series won the 1995 Eisner Award for Best Graphic Novel Reprint, and Mignola also took home the award for Best Writer and Artist for this story as well. And as you'll get to see as this episode progresses, this particular miniseries also served as the blueprint for the 2004 film Hellboy. So, minor spoilers as we are talking just a little bit about what Seed of Destruction is. It's roughly, in part, an origin story. It tells the story of Professor Malcolm Frost, Professor Trevor Broom, Lady Cynthia Eden Jones, a superhero named Torch of Liberty, and a Special Ranger unit united to stop Project Ragnarok. And this is all of this prologue takes place in the 40s. Ragnarok, which is basically the main miniseries villain, Rasputin, he is aiming to open what is called Ordur Jihad. Following the death of Professor Broom, the RPRD, which is the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense, goes in to investigate the death of their mentor. This investigation leads to Kavanaugh's Manor, where they are reconnected to series villain Rasputin once more, and chaos ensues. So before we jump into spoilers for this, Brandon, what are your thoughts on this series as a whole?
I really enjoyed this book. Thought the art was really well done, and really captured the tone of the series. And I really liked the relationship between Hellboy and Professor Broom, because I can relate to being, well, not adopted, but being raised by someone who wasn't my biological father or creator in Hellboy's case. And so I really, really related to a lot of stuff with Hellboy that I'll get into later. But I thought it was really good. And for someone who, like me, and like you said earlier, that's not really educated a lot on Hellboy, it's definitely a good introduction to Hellboy.
Rob, what did you think about this story, man?
So I am a really big Hellboy fan. I was introduced to the character in a two-part crossover with Savage Dragon, because I was a huge Savage Dragon fan in the 90s. And so after that, I got into college and I started reading Hellboy really regularly. And I'm really torn on Seed of Destruction, because it's the first Hellboy, the first, you know, mini-series Hellboy story that really kicked off where he was going. And I love the character, and I love everywhere that he's gone since then. But I think Seed of Destruction, and I talked about this whenever I review it on our show, is I think it's the worst Hellboy story. And it's just, I don't know if it's Mignola was still finding his footing going from being an artist to a writer, but it just seems a little wordy. And I don't know if that's Burns' influence working with him, or like I said, if it was Mignola finding his ground. It's a good enough series. I like it, and I love everything that comes after it. It just, it feels very establishy to me. Like, it feels like, all right, we have to introduce a bunch of stuff, and then everything that comes after it is great. It's just, it's a little wordy for me as a series.
I can understand that, especially because if I remember correctly, Byrne has done a lot with the X-Men comics too, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and so like that's often a complaint I hear when it's like, when you have like kind of casual X-Men fans, it's wordy. And I think that I understand where you're coming from, but I also understand I'm a little bit more in the camp of where Brandon's coming from, you know, two novice Hellboy fans. I think that this series does a decent job at setup. And I think that this series in particular, it lays the groundwork for who Hellboy is and kind of where he became and kind of his roots. But I do agree with you in saying that there are other better Hellboy stories out there, especially the first one after this one where they reintroduce Rasputin as a villain. I think it's the Wolves of St. August, if I remember correctly, is a better one that kind of handles his origin story just a little bit better. There's a short story called The Chain Coffin that explores his origin story just a little bit better as well. So I do agree with you. I think that it can get a bit wordy in here, but I think that it develops itself really good. And aside from maybe the origin portions of this book, it's a really solid, really creepy done story. It's very much set in the vein of Lovecraft, and the colors and the color palette of the art is just really detailed, really unique. And I think that that's one thing that I've always really loved about Magolia's art, is just the nature to it is so unique to it. It's so dark and gothic and Lovecraftian that there's not a whole lot out there that's like it, and it really stands out. It helps the book as a whole stand out, but when you mix that in with the plot as well, I think that it has its weak moments, like you were saying, Rob, but it also has its strengths, and as far as it like progresses and reintroduces this, not only Hellboy as a villain, but also kind of introduces Rasputin as a legitimate threat that we're going to see come back again and again within the mythos.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't mistake me here. Whenever I say this is the worst Hellboy story, that's like you put 10 different bowls of ice cream in front of me and I point at one and say, that's the worst bowl of ice cream. It's still ice cream. I'm going to still eat it and I'm going to be really happy about it. It's just, I mean, you give me anything that Mignola draws and it's dynamite. His stuff is fantastic. I'm never going to, you know, crap on anything that he draws. I just think like this is very much a case of Mignola still finding his footing and establishing what he wants to do. I'm not saying it's bad. It's definitely not bad. It's just one of those things where like when you know what comes after, you're like, boy, this gets a lot better.
Absolutely. And that's kind mm-hmm. of what I really found myself saying was, all right, because I read Seed of Destruction in one sitting from front to back, and then I crashed for that night, and I was like, man, I was just not expecting to love it that much. And as I'm continuing on in the omnibus, like I'm just burning through this thing, and it's like every story that I'm reading past that is so much better. Like I think when you like Batman's is a great example. Like when you look at his very first appearance that handles his origin story, it's good because it lays the foundation. But then you have things like Death in the Family, Death of the Family, Night, the whole Nightfall storyline, like, you know, No Man's Land. Like you just have like all of these fantastic story arcs that follow that particular one, and you know, that I think just are deeply as impactful as the one that started it all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just it's an era thing, because I know Andy on our show, he goes on and It's hilarious. He talks about how much he loves the old Batman stuff and Batman versus the Mad Monk and Batman when he used to shoot people with guns. And it's like, all right, that's okay. But so I'm sure there's people that like Seed of Destruction more than any other Hellboy series. Like, it's the Man of Steel thing again. It's you like what you like, but I just think, you know, it's an okay series. And it sets up so much because also when you get into the BPRD series itself, this becomes so popular because the first several trades of BPRD are either directly or indirectly about these frogs, and they become this global threat thing. And you don't see that coming until you get into there. And once again, you know, it's all birthed from this series.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to unpack this series right after this commercial break. But before we get there, we want to let you guys know that if you or someone you guys know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 129 people that die domestically each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. We have links for all of that wherever you guys are listening to that. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You guys can call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Text anonymously to 741-741, or you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can get even more resources past that. And again, all of that stuff is in the descriptions for this episode or wherever you guys are listening to this. Just hit the link and get connected with counselors, churches, us, hotlines, you name it, we probably got it. So with that, this is the reason we push the content we do, is so that you guys can know that there is hope. Please stay with us because your life matters so much more than you may know or realize in your current season. But with that, we'll be right back.
All right, guys. Hey, this is John from Three Rivers Comic Con and New Dimension Comics. We just moved our store to the waterfront as well as Three Rivers Comic Con. It will be down in the old Macy's building right under the bridge in Homestead at the waterfront, right behind Permane's and Dave & Buster's. We have everybody from Pat Olaf and Ron Frenz and Russ Braun and Mike Golden and tons more artists coming, about 110 artists coming. A bunch of vendors, some publishers, Valiant, Aftershock, Action Lab, Black Box, Source Point Press, they're all going to be there. We have cosplay, we have creators, writers, artists, everything you can think of. It's May 11th and 12th, which is Mother's Day weekend. Come on down, hang out. Tickets start at just $10. You can buy them at your local New Dimension Comics and save on service fees. And don't forget, we make our own beer for the convention, and it is a Russian Imperial Stout with coffee, and it's made by Shoebrew from Zelianople. And Josh Blaylock, creator of Mercy Sparks, is doing the beer label. He will be there all weekend. And you can get your can of the beer by getting your VIP package for the Mercy Sparks Sinful Stout. See you May 11th and 12th.
From the galactic depths of the comic book universe comes the Ghosts of the Stratosphere, ready to galvanize and energize your mind with the latest of comic book news and reviews. And why are you stopping me? Yes, that's much better. Hi, this is Andy Larson for Ghosts of the Stratosphere. Join me every week along with my co-hosts Rob Stewart and Chad Smith, as well as a cavalcade of fantastic comic book guests, as we dish out heaping helpings of the greatest and latest of comic book news and reviews. New shows posted every Tuesday with bonus shows every first Friday of the month. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher under Ghosts of the Stratosphere, as well as on our website www.gotstratosphere.com. Hope to see you soon, folks.
Welcome back to Victims and Villains. We are still talking Hellboy Seed of Destruction. This is your official spoiler warning. So if you guys have not read Seed of Destruction, the four-part miniseries, we are getting ready to jump all into it. So hit pause, go to Comixology, read it, then hit play. So we're going to start dissecting first and foremost. Since we've already talked about general thoughts, we are going to talk about the story as a whole. This is, I started with Brandon last time. Ron, Rob, I'm going to start with you this time, man. What do you think about the direction of this story as a whole?
Like I said, I think it's pretty good. It establishes a lot. Maybe I gave away a little bit on the non-spoiler section, but like I said, the frogs that are introduced here become really important in the BPRD series. And I mean, it just establishes a lot of the mood that carries on from Hellboy. The whole part with Abe Sapien getting, what is it, possessed, or he channels one of the Cavendish boys, and it's all very creepy, and you don't know what's going on, and you have these heroes who have extraordinary abilities, but they're always somehow in over their head, like, a lot of times, and especially with Hellboy, they just kind of luck their way into, you know, not dying most of the time, and that's kind of what happens here with, you know, stuff goes on with Liz, and Abe gets possessed for a little bit, and they just kind of all come out of it in the end with Abe harpooning Rasputin and saving the day, but it's that carries on throughout a lot of Hellboy, where it's not a lot of Hellboy just going up and you know, punching villainy until it falls down and the BPRD saves the day. It's a lot of weird, you know, like, well, kind of fell backwards into that one.
Yeah, I can kind of see where you're coming from with that one. So, Brandon,
there's a mini series. I'll just jump in real fast. There's a mini series. I forget what the mini series is called, but it's I think it might be in Japan, it might not, but Hellboy's fighting this giant dragon, and the dragon has him wrapped up, and the dragon's about to kill him, but the dragon is wrapping him against a statue, and the statue shatters under the weight of the dragon, and the statue's holding a sword, and it just falls and pierces the dragon, and that's how the dragon dies, and that's a lot of what Hellboy is. It's a lot of like, well, just happened to work out for us, and it makes the character so much fun, because he has this attitude, but Mignola's not above just putting him through the ringer and, you know, letting him hope for the best.
I think that adds for a level of just unexpected nature, because I think comics as a whole, you pick up comics all the time and you're going in blind, basically, a lot of times, because you don't know what each story is going to present or what each issue is going to present. So adding that level of luck kind of makes it to where you can just feel, I don't even know, like, really how to say, like, it just kind of adds this, like, unexpected amount of, like, joy or, like, fun nature, like you were talking about.
Yeah, it creates a real sense of peril, too, because I love the character of Superman. I love him. But the problem with writing Superman in fight scenes is that ultimately Superman's going to punch his enemy to death. Well, not to death, but he's going to punch him into oblivion, and that's how every Superman fight's going to end. With Hellboy, I mean, you go in and thinking, like, well, how's Mignola going to get him out of this one? Is this going to actually have ramifications? Is something terrible going to happen? Because you don't expect him to just go in and have solutions for everything. So there is a constant sense of, oh, he's actually in danger here.
Yeah. All right, Brandon, what do you think about how this story progresses?
Well, I know I'm not the only person who read everything in Hellboy when as you're reading everything Hellboy says in Ron Perlman's voice, because I definitely did.
No, you're not alone in that. I definitely did that too.
But for some reason there were some parts where I read it in his voice when he voiced Deathstroke in Teen Titans. I don't know why. Weird.
His voice is so much a little bit like more deeper and like a little bit more almost calmer and muffled when you hear his voice in Teen Titans versus like when you hear him animated as Hellboy.
I should have just read it as him as Clay Morris from Sons of Anarchy. I mean, it hits. Oh man, as a whole, I thought this was a really good book as a whole. I really enjoyed it, but I also am a novice to the story, to Hellboy. But the thing with the frogs, like, I never really did catch a lot of understanding of, like, what the frogs are, or who they are. Or what? I mean, I looked over this book a couple of times when I read it, And I just, like, never did understand it. But I guess I got to read more to understand that. But as far as kind of getting you getting, I guess, people introduced to the characters of the main villain and all that stuff, I thought it did a really good job with that. The one thing that kind of bothered me was how quickly it did kill off Professor Broom. You know, it was like a few pages in after you read the intro to for everybody that it kind of kills them off, and it doesn't really give you a whole lot of time to see his relationship with Hellboy. But throughout the book, you can really see how close they were, and even with Rasputin, like, saying, you know, come with me, I'm your creator, and I'll show you what you who you really are. And he's like, no, I'm good, I have a father, you know, like, which is which that really hit home with me, because my girlfriend's always trying to get me to do this 23andMe thing to find out, like, who my biological family and stuff is from my dad's side. I'm like, no, I'm okay, you know, I have a dad. So, like, that was a really cool little thing to see Hellboy so, like, I guess, how much he loved and respected Broom for what he did for him. But enough rambling on that. And I really liked the part with Abe Sapien, where he kind of just saved the day out of nowhere, being possessed through one of the guys. What's the last name again of the boys?
I think it's Cavendish.
Cavendish.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember it for anything, because I haven't seen the second film in a while, but I watched the first one the other day, and reading this, while Rob was talking about how they kind of just, like, win their fights, you know, not very easily. They kind of just, like, well, crap, here we are. Like, it was kind of like if Abe Sapien wouldn't have been there when he was, that could have been the end of the entire series. I feel like that there would have been, there goes Liz, there goes Hellboy. I mean, it's like, you know, it definitely gives the reader, especially a new reader like me, a kind of like suspense of like, man, what are they going to do? And that was really neat how everything worked out. I definitely want to read everything else after this, because I highly doubt Rasputin's dead. So yeah, that's all I got for that right now.
I'll say, actually, especially with and I don't know about the Professor Bruttenholm thing. Like, I wonder if that was a missed opportunity on Mignola's part, just killing him off so early. But the nice thing, you know, the nice thing that this character died. But the nice thing is, when he dies so early on, it does create a sense of, you know, maybe not Hellboy, but as you're reading it, you legitimately think, like, oh, Liz might not make it out of here. Oh, Abe might not make it out of here. Like, when Professor Broom dies so early on, Mignola's setting up, like, no one is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because, you know, losing a father figure so early within this, it almost kind of feels like Mignola is trying to set him up as this superhero, because the general, by this time in our culture, the general trope of superheroes is you generally can't be a superhero without a tragic backstory. You look at Batman, you look at Superman, you look at, you know, what Wonder Woman's had to sacrifice, you look at Iron Man, and just so on and so forth. But it kind of almost kind of seems like that, but the way that Hellboy has, the way that the comic itself kind of conducts itself, it feels almost kind of like anti-superhero, because it is dealing with a lot of these darker colors. It's dealing with a lot of these darker themes. It's got a very monster movie 50s feel to it. It has even the art is very reminiscent of something that might look like it would belong in, like, the Universal Monsters. So it's interesting dynamic that Mignola creates with killing off Professor Broom so early in the series, but also at the same time kind of creating these high stakes tragedy almost for the Liz and Abe Sapien characters.
Well, the book also, as it goes on, it really kind of fakes you out. And I don't know if Brandon knows this. You sound like you've read enough that you probably do. But Hellboy, as, you know, a member of a superhero team, essentially the BPRD, that only lasts for about three or four trades. And then he just leaves. And Hellboy, the comic book itself, is just him exploring the world and, you know, stumbling into weird circumstances and you know, various mythological figures trying to get him to become what they think he should be. And it loses the whole superhero thing relatively quickly, and it just becomes this awesome character in this fantastic fable-filled world for a while. And I really love those trades. Like, once he loves the BPRD, I think Hellboy spikes dramatically, and it's just all this super weird stuff coming out of the woodwork. And because you really do, you read it, and it's like you said, he has the backstory where he loses his quote-unquote parent, and he's in this superhero team, and they are sent out on missions to fight evil in the world. And then Mignola just goes like, nope, we're just splitting them off and they're going to become different books. And Hellboy himself is just going to become weird.
No, I didn't know that, but that's actually good to know, because that actually, for some reason, makes me more pumped to want to like put down what I'm reading now to read more Hellboy, because that sounds really interesting than just a typical superhero team that deals with really weird, dark stuff.
Yeah, it becomes a lot different than, you know, like an Avengers book, except they fight demons and things. It really becomes the book that I know of as Hellboy that you really think of as different than the norm and something that you look forward to reading, because everything is so well researched and just comes out of the woodwork and comes out of this guy's crazy, you know, research slash imagination. It just becomes a lot more interesting when it's not just a superhero book. And I say that loving superhero books. Like, I will read X-Men books till I die. Don't get me wrong.
Sorry.
You can go, dude.
I was going to say, like, recently I've, like, kind of opened myself up to getting outside of the realm of strictly superhero books and reading more, like, I guess, weird and different things. Like, I was going to say, Josh, He inspired me to start reading the Grant Morrison run of Doom Patrol, which is very weird compared to your other superhero books. And that reading that got my mind open to a lot more. So like hearing you talk about Hellboy in that way has my mind to not only read Hellboy, but look into other stuff too, the past Hellboy, to find like just the weirdest stories I could find in comics, because there's so much more than superheroes in comics, and I'm still kind of learning that in a way.
Well, I mean, all right, let's not like go out of like the realm of like weirdness, because Seed of Destruction has its level of weirdness, and the progression of like these frog creatures into kind of the almost the occult that is based around Rasputin. I know that they kind of explored a little bit more in stories like Wake the Devil and the Wolves of St. August are kind of more stories that were they're able to do it. But to your point, Brandon, at the beginning of the second chapter, the second book for this, there is this like layout of talking about why frogs, and it says frogs like snakes, scorpions, ravens, and black cats are traditionally considered harbingers of doom, witnessed by the following tale, an African myth about a frog. On a day when a little water was to be found, man spent a while in thought and realized he might one day die, never to rise again. Man sent dog to God to ask that he might come back to life again, like the flowering plants after death. Dog went off and followed his nose towards God. He was soon distracted by the smell of soup and followed his hunger towards the source, leaning close to watch it boil. Dog was content and forgot his mission. Seeing that dog was lost, frog took it upon himself to go to God and tell him that man did not want to live again, and if man were to be reborn, thought frog, he would soon be muddy the rivers and destroy the birthplace of frogs. dog finally arrived to tell God man's mission. Leaning low, he crooned man's need for rebirth in the song of his howl. God was touched by the devotion of the man of the dog for man, but God granted the frog's wish because he got there first. And they basically explore from the time that you kind of see the little frog in the teacup to the plague of frogs that you kind of see as the story progresses. Like, the frogs are basically this like sign of rebirth and death almost throughout the course of the series, mainly because they come to be the Cavendish's boys, for lack of a better term, and they basically become servants of Rasputin.
Yeah, no, that's a good take. I that's the kind of stuff that Mignola finds and he just builds worlds around. It's really stuff that I can't imagine just coming up with and finding things in history or you know, folklore and stuff and just building worlds around it. It's fascinating to me how he just comes up with some stuff.
I had to process that for a second because I was like, wait, soup distracted. Okay. I mean, I had soup for dinner earlier, and you know,
well, there wasn't any frogs in it, was there? That could be bad.
Oh, well, I think it was frog soup, actually.
But I think the intake of these kind of how he merges all of these cultures together and to like brings them into this like modern, like this with this like modern twist, but that twist is so extreme that it's just like weird enough to only work within the Hellboy universe. I think that is what makes Mignola's work as a writer and a creator for that matter too all the more brilliant, is because he does really stand out. Like, yes, like there it does embrace superhero tropes, but for, I mean, for the most part, like, this is a very gothic, very monster based weird book. And Rob, what you're talking about, like, as he kind of leaves the BPRD, I gotta say that really slow because that's really wordy, it sounds like it only kind of goes up from hill from here.
Yeah, he does a lot of it's amazing the stuff, and he pulls it from all over the world. Just, I mean, all these fables, all this mythology, all this folklore from everywhere. And like I said, once Hellboy leaves the BPRD, he just goes exploring around, and you know, Excalibur and the Knights of the Round Table get involved, and for a while he's in Japan and some Japanese myths get involved, and a bunch of different vampires, the goddess Hecate is involved, the Baba Yaga from Russia becomes a very central figure. So I mean, I can't even fathom all the research that had to go into just Hellboy as a whole. Like, he has to have read a lot of folklore, a lot of mythology.
I literally just, it's funny that you mentioned things like the Japan and the Hecate, because those are both subjects of like the animated films that they did in between the two Ron Perlman films, which are just, they just dove in so extreme to that. And sort of Storms, which dealt a lot with the Japanese mythos, and then you have Blood and Iron, which deals a lot with, like, you know, vampires and like Hecate, like these Greek mythos. Like, it's just it's astonishing the amount of research, like you were saying, that just goes into it, and like it flows so seamlessly. Like, they take, you know, their own mythos, and then they take these cultural mythos and they just bring them and marry them together.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a lot of work, and I fancy myself somewhat of a writer, and it's, you know, it has to be something he's had a passion for his entire life. I can't imagine how else you just retain all this knowledge. But I mean, boy, it's just amazing to me how much stuff he brings in, and he ties it all in, and nothing feels out of place.
Too bad he didn't have the Lore podcast back when he was doing all this.
No, but he also did do Batman, the Jack the Ripper.
The Doom That Came to Gotham? Oh, that was
I can't remember.
That was a different one. What was the Jack the Ripper one? I forget.
Gotham by Gaslight. That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. I always get that and the Doom That Came to Gotham confused because he worked on both of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, even as this story kind of goes, kind of digs in a little bit further, what do you guys think? How did you guys kind of think about, you know, the element of adding Mrs. Cavendish to this and kind of the use of like her boys and kind of the reintroduction of Rasputin to the series?
I'll start there. It's all right. Once again, like I said, I just thought a lot of this series was just a bit wordy. I mean, these characters are there and the boys turn into the frogs. And like I said, the frogs are very imposing and not, you know, you don't typically think of like all the villains are frogs and think that they're going to be as lethal and terrifying as these frogs are. And especially once you get into Mike's artwork and just those little pock marks that the frog's tongues leave on everybody. Those are so creepy. And Miss Cavendish dies and just her form is all, I love his art. And it's just, everything is so atmospheric. Yeah, I think I kind of lost the lead on that one. Just started talking about Mike Mignola's artwork because it's beautiful. But well, I mean, go ahead.
I mean, that is like the next step that I wanted to progress the conversation was to talk about the artwork because like I'm going through it right now. It's in my hand and like there are just, it is so atmospheric, like you were saying, like when it needs to be like this, like dark and mysterious, because when you read the first two issues, like there's a lot of like mystery in it. But when there's like almost like this, like turning point in the third issue and then the fourth climax, the climactic fourth issue, but like the first two issues, they feel a little bit more kind of like shady, a little bit more darker color palette because you have a lot of mystery that surrounds his art, and he's able to really balance the tone really well with his art, which I think that there are really good artists that can do that, but then there are some times where the storyteller is telling art that's really, it's like a darker story, but then it also has this like really bright color palette that kind of doesn't match. But when you're talking in terms of Mignola's art, I think he balances that really well.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's an absolute genius of an artist, and that's, I used it a few minutes ago, but one of the words I will always use when I describe his art is atmospheric. Like, Hellboy is a series that can go from just, you know, crazy fight scene action to creepy and scary to, you know, side-splittingly funny all in the span of a few pages. And his art just carries everything. The scary stuff is dark and the monsters are hideous and gruesome looking. And the action scenes, it's just, you know, Hellboy punches things and yells, boom! And it's... everything just feels bigger than it even needs to. And the funny stuff is you have this character that looks like Hellboy and he can still get these facial expressions from Mignola. So, I have all the respect in the world for Mignola. You can tell from how I talk about how his research is and how his art is that, I mean, I just think the guy does everything at just such a high level. He knows what he's doing at every level. And I mean, you can watch his art develop. We actually read on our show sometime last year a book he drew for DC called Cosmic Odyssey. And you look at that and it's good artwork. But then you look at some of the stuff across Hellboy and it's like, wow, this is a guy who started off good and just honed his craft and really realized, you know, how to take use of shadows and how to take use of size and perspective and just make everything work. Because you get into the Cavendish Hall in this series, and it feels labyrinth in how big this hall is, and you don't know what's coming, and you don't know what's behind everything, and it feels like this house is 20 times bigger than this house should be, because he just makes everything, he just builds that atmosphere inside of it.
I think, too, like, to your point, I have the book open right now, and, like, the very, like, almost the last couple pages of issue 4, you see where Rasputin gets stabbed with the harpoon by Abe, and it's a lot of darker colors where you have your blacks and your dark blues and your greens, and then as that page progresses, and it the last panel on this page focuses on like this very possessed version of Liz, and then it's a splash page where you're getting a lot more brighter colors, and then as you're kind of going through this, and it's kind of the teardown sequence of Agdu Jihad, you're seeing like the brightness of this color, and Hellboy says, you know, I don't think I'm done here yet, and then they have this final spar off between him and Rasputin, and it's just like very bright yellows, very oranges, there's a lot of black that's in here, but I mean for the most part, like, it's this very bright sequence, and it lasts until the destruction of the Cavanaugh Hall or the Cavendish Hall, and then, you know, the finale kind of brings them back, and it's just this very dark, but it's like a few pages, and he just kind of evolves the art to be what it needs to be, and it's probably one of the reasons that I love this character so much, is just because had another artist picked up this art, I mean, I'm sure that if you put someone like Alex Ross or like Jim Leon here, like, it would be cool, but I don't think it would be as impactful as Mignolia's art.
Yeah, it actually, and this is another spoiler for Brandon down the line, that's kind of, as much as I love the story of Hellboy, when you get into maybe the last couple of trades of Hellboy, he starts bringing in new artists. I want to say it's Dave Stewart he brings in a lot, and Mignola's still writing the stories, but it's not his artwork anymore. It's a guy who apes him fairly well, but it's not exactly Mignola. So you do lose a little bit there. One of the best things is the follow-up, Hellboy in Hell, is once again Mignola at the pencils. But it does kind of lose something later on when Mignola stops being the primary artist, because he just created so many other books. He just had too much on his plate with BPRD and Lobster Johnson and Abe Sapien and the amazing Screw-On Head. I think he just had too much to do to keep drawing Hellboy, too.
Lobster Johnson, that's interesting. I had to look that one up.
All right. Well, Brandon, what do you have to say about this art, man?
Man, I thought the art was just freaking breathtaking, because you know me, I like dark and gothic stuff. And my favorite thing, though, was whenever you would finish a book, it would, like, the chapter pages I'm talking about, like chapter one, chapter two, whatever. That was my favorite pieces of artwork in the books for some reason. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why. I guess it's because it's like, it's black and white, and it's not like a just like generic black and white. Like, it just captures the beauty of it as it would in color to me. And I don't know, it's like the shadowing of it is just spot on. Like, it's, I don't know, it's something I can look at and just feel like I really want to buy that for my wall, but I can't because my girlfriend wouldn't approve of that one. But, oh, she hates that film, Lords of Chaos. I have the poster of that on my wall, and she freaking hates it because it has the black metal, like, makeup, you know, like, evil-looking guy on it. And she hates it so much. I'm like, hey, you get over it. It's awesome.
I actually, my wife bought me a notebook a couple years ago, and it, you know, had a 5-section notebook, and I use it to, you know, jot down and work on various projects. But she, on the inside cover of the notebook, actually sketched me a Hellboy, and I still have that around here.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's really cool. I was looking through this book as well, and Josh, earlier you read, the thing about the frogs. Okay, I didn't know that was in here until I just looked and you said something. Because when I finished book one, I hit the little thing at the bottom of Comixology where you can go to all the pages, and I just went directly to chapter two and didn't even, like, read the other two things. So that was a novice mistake on my part for not noticing that and reading it. Because I was like, I saw it, and I was like, wait a second, I didn't even know that was in here.
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I like buying like the physical copies, because like there's just something about holding a comic book in your hand. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I have subscriptions to like digital services, but there's just something about being able to hold it in your hands. And especially when you're talking about Hellboy, like there's just something about being able to take in Mignolia's art on a larger scale that I think you kind of miss when you're on like a phone or a tablet. And it really kind of almost feels really just like you can feel the love that he has for this character that he has created. The fact that, you know, like we were talking about earlier, with the history interwoven within this, the mythology from the different cultures interwoven within to make up this mythos, but also at the same time to really kind of take these like just black and white or black and gray splash pages, you know, to kind of start off and transition between the stories. I think that our resident movie man on here made a quote one time, said Phil Collins did not have to give us the Tarzan soundtrack, but he did it anyways.
Oh, yes, and he did. Yeah,
and Mike Mignola, you know, he doesn't have to do all these things with the characters, but you can really feel that sense of love and that labor and that passion when you read and you just kind of look at everything from how it's written, how it's crafted, and just how it's drawn as well.
So you're saying that Mike Mignola is the Phil Collins of comic books?
Yeah.
Hellboy's the Tarzan soundtrack of comics.
Yeah.
You can feel Hellboy coming in the air tonight.
Yes, you can.
All right. Well, that is actually going to do it for us, unless you guys had something more you guys wanted to add to that.
I love Hellboy. I don't think this is the strongest series, but once again, like I said, it's those 10 bowls of ice cream. Like, I'll still eat it.
Yeah, and I mean, it does a really good job at laying foundational work. I think it's a really good introductory series, not only to, like you said, it's really wordy, but I feel like it kind of has to be in retrospect, because you're being introduced to where Hellboy came from, what his powers are. You're also being introduced to the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. You're being introduced to Abraham Sabian, Liz. You're being introduced to Professor Broom, but you're also being introduced to the Rasputin, which is almost kind of like the Joker to his Batman, because he appears so frequently within the mythos that, you know, you're getting all of that. And I just love I think one thing that we didn't really talk about, but that I really love, is I just kind of love the connection between the hero and the villain of Hellboy and Rasputin, because it's this like unintentionally emotionally like tied story that I feel like not a whole lot of, you know, protagonists and antagonists in other comic books really share. And I think that it makes their rivalry and their connection all much more special and really stand out.
Yeah, you get it's kind of a twisting on a lot of other things, because if you go back to Batman 1989, Batman accidentally creates the Joker. Or if you go through Spider-Man, you know, a lot of his villains are accidentally created because of something he has done or in regards to him or something. But Hellboy is one where the villain actually accidentally creates the hero, which is not something you see a whole lot.
Yeah, and like it's a popular thing to say within comic books that your hero or your villain should be the mirror opposite of your hero, and that kind of doesn't really happen here. I mean, it kind of does in a way, but it's just more, I think it's a really unique connection that these two guys share. So that's going to do it for us. If you guys have read Seed of Destruction, what do you guys think about it? Make sure that you guys leave us comments wherever you guys listen to this, on Facebook or tweet to us on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, where can people find more of Ghost of the Stratosphere?
That's at @GotStratosphere on Twitter, yes.
Brandon, where can we find you online, my friend?
You can find me at on Instagram at The Changing of Times, Twitter at Braden W. Miller. You can find my stuff on Victims Facebook, website, YouTube. And I'm about to go follow your stuff right now, Rob.
All right. Awesome.
All right. You guys can follow us everywhere at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Subscribe to us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you guys like what we stand for, want to help us get suicide prevention resources and materials into conventions and schools, consider supporting us on Patreon and or a one-time donation via Etsy, where you guys can pick up some cool swag as well. That's going to do it for us. So until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing. Nothing else, and beware the right hand of doom.
That's Entertainment Podcast Network. Entertainment and culture, artist owned, fan supported.